This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 20th at 10:24 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like the political news will slow down in the second month of the Trump administration. You know, we need time to catch up. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who drag out their campaign launches to gain maximum attention. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Vivek Ramaswamy makes it official. But first, it is week two of the Jim Tressel era at the Ohio State House. And we have not heard much from the new lieutenant governor this week. No doubt he's getting a crash course on the inner workings of state government. He has yet to set up a campaign website, no TresselForOhio.org out there, but there is still time. To dissect the surprise pick of the former Ohio State University football coach to be lieutenant governor, and also to have a robust discussion over the fight over diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, we turn to a panel of State House observers, reporters Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio and Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide, as well as Democratic strategist Brian Rothenberg and Republican strategist Mark Weaver. We begin with the Tressel decision and a question to Andrew Tobias.
Andrew, why Jim Tressel?
One of the things that Mike DeWine said was that he wanted to choose somebody who could do the job as governor. That's one of the main responsibilities of lieutenant governors, to be first in the line of succession. And so it's kind of interesting for him to put it that way, because, you know, maybe he also was thinking about who may be fit to succeed him, although, you know, that's like a whole other topic. But Jim Tressel has experience dealing with the legislature because of his role formerly at the Youngstown State University as a president. He's someone who has some connections with Christian conservative organization. So really, it's an outside-the-box pick. It maybe is surprising to people who think that a football coach would be in such an important government position, but it actually makes sense if you think about it.
You look at John Houston's resume, the man who just left the post. He had 20 years, including 4 years as Speaker, 8 years as Secretary of State, 6 years as Lieutenant Governor. And Jim Tressel, he's dealt with the legislature, but no direct experience in the State House, Mark. Is that a good pick on that alone, just because of experience?
John Houston did play football, so they have that in common. Yeah. We are moving into an age when the establishment credentials that would normally put you in the line to have a job like this are becoming somewhat less important. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have people with credentials. It just means they're different credentials. And if he went right from the football coach to LG, I probably would have my doubts. But he worked at the University of Akron as a vice president. That's a significant university in this state. And then he was the president of Youngstown State, another important institution. And so those both being state universities and having their own sort of politics to them, because there's campus politics, I think it's good. It's good experience.
Brian Rothenberg, from when we watched him as coach of Ohio State, he always was very polished in his news conferences, could dodge questions with the best of them. Mm-hmm. What took him so long to get into politics is a question I have.
Well, first of all, Mark, I'm going to remember what you said about new people coming in from the outside during the next election. But, you know, what's really important here, he is a safe pick. If you've ever dealt with the faculty council, there's a lot of politics on the faculty council, and we have some faculty around us. But more importantly, he does have a learning curve. For instance, this morning I heard him sort of float very quietly that he wants to define what can be bargained and what can't be bargained. Well, some of that is governed by federal law. Some of that can actually be dangerous with our current legislature, which would try to leave almost nothing to bargain. Those are little minefields he's going to have trouble with. And I heard that on the radio this morning, and I was like, I think he needs to dial back a little bit.
Yeah, there will be some rookie mistakes, I'm sure. Right, Joe, for a person that doesn't speak the language of lawmaking and doesn't have not as polished as far as political speech goes.
I think there'd be rookie mistakes anyway. I mean, honestly, if you look at polished lawmakers, they come in and they make mistakes. But I think, you know, as you were pointing out, when you're a college president, you have a lot of constituencies. Plus, you're dealing with the legislature. Don't forget, you know, who do you think gives you funding? Where do you go to get those big donors? You know, how do you deal with all that? And having those skills are the very same same skills that you use in government. So, you know, I think that he does have the skill set. Now, will he make mistakes? Probably, but who won't?
So, Andrew, getting back to what you alluded to, will he run again? He told the Youngstown Vindicator he hasn't ruled it out. Jim Tressel, a run for statewide office in 26. You got to at least think he's toying with the idea. You don't take this job without at least thinking about running down the road, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of conversation about that pretty much from the moment that he was announced. And I think any good politician probably keeps their options open. You know, I think that he's been asked the question over and over again. He's given similar answers. It's gotten more coverage. It gets more attention to his cause. So we'll see. But if the governor were trying to pick somebody who could potentially run for office, Jim Tressel would be pretty high on the top of the list. He's, as we've talked about here, people have discussed him running for office for years. When I asked him, why haven't you? He just kind of brushed it off and said, oh, I've been busy, Andrew, you know. But but certainly you could see it happening.
So, Mark, is this a sign that Governor DeWine is not happy with Vivek Ramaswamy and Dave Yost as his possible successor? Is he trying to groom a successor to carry on his legacy as a more establishment moderate Republican?
Some people are reading that. I think what's more likely happening here is Mike DeWine wants folks to know that he has two more years left, that he's not going to just quietly be a caretaker governor, even though he's not going to run again. He still can change up and switch up the political order in Ohio. He has done that with this pick, and I think he is very pleased that he was able to surprise a lot of people.
Amy Acton, the only announced Democratic candidate for governor, Brian, against Jim Tressel. To Youngstown folks.
It would be very interesting. It would be a battle of the valley. So, but you know,
that's a long
but
way
if you really
from
want
that.
An outsider, Amy Acton would be it.
Now, she gets criticized for being too nice. Jim Tressel seems to be a nice guy.
Yeah, they both come
can
out
he
of that.
Can he handle the rough and tumble world, negative ads, tough questions, biting attacks by opponents?
Well, that's the one problem with politics. But it's also, as Mark will tell you, with candidates these days, it's a dicey thing. Because people think you can get away with it like Donald Trump does. That is not the norm. And so if that biting kind of stuff backfires, it doesn't help.
Okay. Diversity, equity, and inclusion programs expanded and spread rapidly in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. Many welcomed the effort. Many thought they went too far. Now they are really under fire. President Trump issued an order getting rid of DEI programs in the federal government. This week, the Ohio Senate passed a bill that bans them on Ohio public college campuses. Many universities are not waiting for the bill to pass the House before acting. Two diversity officials at Ohio State left their post recently, and many private companies have also eliminated or narrowed the scope of their formal diversity efforts. Andrew Tobias, to this Senate bill, lots of protests at the State House, but it was really no doubt that it was going to pass.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that a similar bill advanced through the Senate in the last General Assembly, froze in the House for a long time. They were able to negotiate a lot of changes to it, namely a lot of the opposition had to do with collective bargaining issues. And we've kind of gotten back to square one with the bill. And so, you know, Matt Huffman, the House Speaker this week, pointed out there are a lot of new Republicans in the chamber. Huffman is personally supportive of the bill, which will go a long way towards just having it get a hearing in advance and stuff like that. So I think kind of given the change in the legislature, given the change in the political climate, it will be interesting to see if Republicans are considering negotiating on this or if what they pass is going to be pretty similar to what ends up being making it into law ultimately.
I take it the governor supports this bill, Joe?
Yeah.
Are you getting any indication?
He's supporting. I think he supports the gist of it. There might be some things around the edges that he might like to see, you know, changed a little bit. And, you know, when it goes through the House, there is the possibility it will change. But you know, there's more support for it in the House, in this House, than there was in the last General Assembly. So what comes out of it, how it's changed, that remains to be seen.
Well, let's remember that we're coming up on 2 years since the United States Supreme Court said it violates the 14th Amendment to the Constitution for universities to treat people differently based on racial characteristics. And so the notion that we would follow up on this is not particularly controversial since it's the law of the land.
Yeah, now, this is where things get twisted with DEI, because DEI is just an educational program. I mean, there is not a woman that is watching this that has not gone into some effort to try to get a job, that has not felt like they weren't being treated on merit in some instance. There's not a black or a brown person in Ohio that has ever gone into those situations. And as a gay Ohioan, I have absolutely no rights in this state compared to like Michigan. And I can tell you as a gay Ohioan, you know that you're not being always treated based on the merits.
It's been against federal law.
It's about education.
For years, for decades.
It is against the law.
Been
so why is it wrong to educate people?
Because one person being discriminated against has a lawsuit, and there's hundreds of lawyers who will pick up that lawsuit for them. But the notion of a university saying, we're going to start out saying, let's treat people differently based on something they can't control.
They're saying, let's educate people.
That's not what it is. DEI goes to racial preferences in hiring.
DEI, after the stunning murder of George Floyd and all the protests, and people were outraged, and we were in the midst of COVID, so anxiety was high. Did some DEI programs go too far?
I don't think so, because I worked for the UAW where we had plants, and I can tell you in my 8 years there, I dealt with things like nooses that were hanging in plants, even post then. I think these education programs are about treating everybody to be treated as an equal so that people understand the differences.
But Mark, would you agree that it has been harder for people of color, for women, to get jobs they're qualified for through the decades? And this is, whether it be affirmative action or education, trying to at least correct those wrongs and make them feel a little more level.
Of course. And that's what the 1960s and 1970s were all about. Now, women are more likely to come out of college. Women are more likely to get into law school. There have been specific programs specifically for people of a certain color or women. The 14th Amendment is the law of the land. We don't get to choose what equal protection means. Equal protection means you're based on your merit, not based on your characteristics.
But you're twisting this, because the equal protection is about allowing everybody not to have this problem. And what's happening here is there's this twisted thing, especially in the part of the Trump White House, to say all of it needs to be based on merit. But it's not.
So, Andrew, one of the parts of this bill is to encourage, require professors to accept all points of view, or reasonably all points of view. How do you enforce that?
Well, the way the bill puts it is that universities have to set up a procedure to handle student complaints. I don't have all the details of the entire bill committed to memory, but I know that there is an element where ultimately the legislature has the ability to reduce funding for a university that's deemed to not be complying with all of the different elements of the bill. So I think ultimately, I'm sure universities will have administrative processes that they set up, but putting the legislature as the backstop kind of it creates it as a political process at the end of the day.
Well, and the example the opponents use is that we're going to allow the flat earth theory to be taught in colleges.
How about Holocaust?
Let's talk about it. Here's the best way. Of course we should let somebody stand up and say the earth is flat, because everyone in that room will immediately know that that is somebody who should never be listened to because it's a goofy idea. Where people start wondering whether it's true is when we say, hush it up. Let's keep that quiet. Of course the Holocaust happened, and anybody who says it didn't will be marginalized for such a stupid view.
That's exactly what they did in Nazi Germany.
Oh, no. If Nazi Germany shut down free speech, in America, everybody should be able to say what they want, especially when it's a stupid idea, because the rest of us will immediately know we shouldn't believe that.
Let's hope we can continue to agree on what stupid ideas and statements are. It's not an easy task these days. That was Republican strategist Mark Weaver, Democratic strategist Brian Rothenberg, as well as State House reporters Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio and Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide. My thanks to them. We'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2026 race for governor is gaining another major candidate, officially, at least. Former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy has filed preliminary paperwork to run for governor, and he plans to publicly launch his campaign this coming week with a tour around the state. Of course, this is no surprise. The Cincinnati native, who now lives outside Columbus, has been toying with the idea of running for governor since he dropped out of the presidential race. He's thought to be a favorite of President Trump, but the president's favorite things are prone to change, of course. Vivek's primary competitor is Attorney General Dave Yost, who announced his candidacy last month. It's another battle here in Ohio of an insider versus an outsider. We saw it in the last two campaigns for U.S. Senate, with outsiders J.D. Vance and Bernie Marino prevailing in those races, largely thanks to Trump endorsements. Yost has the statewide elected resume, 8 years as state auditor, 6 years as attorney general. Vivek has the resume of a successful entrepreneur. Both have a little baggage. Yost will be dogged by his one-time strong support of ECOT. Remember ECOT? The electronic classroom of tomorrow, which closed abruptly and was found to owe the state tens of millions of dollars in misspent funds. Well, Yost was a big backer of ECOT at first and went against it later on as auditor. Vivek Ramaswamy recently criticized the county's education system for promoting prom queens and jocks over scientists and engineers. That did not go over that well, and it helped push him out of President Trump's so-called government efficiency project. Regardless, it will be fun to watch. Two strong candidates with very different backgrounds running for an open seat. And we still don't know if Jim Tressel is going to run, whether Sherrod Brown will run for anything in 2026, and if his fellow Democrat, Amy Acton, can make the transition to politics. 2 months into 2025, and the 2026 campaign is certainly here. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. As we said, we are still a long way from Election Day in 2026, when Ohio picks a new governor, but candidates are already running and collecting endorsements. Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose this week endorsed Vivek Ramaswamy for governor. Of course, technically, Ramaswamy had not even announced his campaign yet. LaRose says Ramaswamy is the type of bold leader Ohio needs to move the state forward. It is a shrewd move, an early endorsement in what could be a competitive race. We have to think Ramaswamy is endorsing LaRose's bid to be state auditor in 2026. Anyway, we'll see how it all works out. But for going a little bit out on a limb, Frank LaRose gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. We ask you to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about us. Help us spread the word as we continue to cover politics here in Ohio in a civilly irreverent manner. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.